Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for coming during this lunch hour. I appreciate your time. I'm going to be presenting some preliminary findings from my dissertation research entitled Interorganization Collaboration, Factors Affecting Community Health Policy Advocacy Efforts Aimed at Addressing Health Inequities Among Youth. I have no relationships to disclose. So I'm going to give a very brief overview of some of the literature that informed my research questions for my dissertation. I'm then going to provide a description of my methods that I used for my dissertation and a brief description of the three interorganization collaborations with which I partnered. I'll then present, again, some preliminary findings, including the internal challenges and facilitating factors, external challenges and facilitating factors, and a little bit about how youth are engaged in the policy advocacy process. And I'll conclude with some takeaway points and some of my next steps. So as I'm sure we all know, there are racial and ethnic health inequities among youth, with youth of color and youth from lower socioeconomic backgrounds experiencing worse health outcomes, while their white and or middle or upper class peers have better health outcomes. Some examples would be worse outcomes due to asthma, higher incidence of HIV, and a higher rate of mortality due to violence. There are a lot of factors that contribute to these health inequities, and a lot of them we see in literature around adults and general population. A couple of things that are unique to youth are their involvement in different institutions, where youth who are able to graduate from high school have improved health compared to their peers who drop out of school, and youth who are involved in the juvenile justice system tend to have poorer health outcomes. So my research is really informed by the ecological perspective that was proposed by McElroy and colleagues. And in this pictorial representation, we see the McElroy model where his model describes how different levels of one's environment can impact their health. And so we see the different levels in this picture where each outer circle impacts the next inner circle. So when we look at this, we see that public policy, the outermost circle, can have an impact on all the other levels of a person's environment. And so this is the reason why public policy is often pointed to as an important place for public health intervention. When we think about policy change, one strategy that's often used is the use of inter-organization collaborations. And I might refer to these as IOCs to get through our 20 minutes. So I'm using a definition proposed by Abramson and Rosenthal, which is a group of independent organizations who are committed to working together for specific purposes and tangible outcomes while maintaining their own autonomy. So we've seen some literature around coalitions and networks that ties different factors related to the coalition to outcomes such as programmatic outcomes, but we don't really know much about what factors within the IOC contribute to successful policy change. And so that really is my research questions. So the purpose of my study is to examine the internal and external factors of an IOC that contribute to their ability to bring about policy change. And so for internal factors, just to give you an example of what I'm talking about there, this might be things such as leadership or decision-making practices or membership of the IOC. For external factors, I'm thinking about things like the political or the economic environment in which it's operating. My last research question, again, is to describe the ways in which youth are engaged in policy change efforts, particularly those policy change efforts geared at reducing health inequities or issues other issues related to youth. So I conducted a qualitative study of three youth-serving inter-organization collaborations in a state in the Northeast. I used a purposeful sampling from a number of IOCs that were all working on policy change related to youth issues, and all of the ones that I sampled from were funded under one common initiative from a local foundation. So these IOCs were working on a variety of different public policy issues, such as issues related to high school dropout, school curriculum policies, or issues in the juvenile justice system. So my data, the data that I collected included interviews. And so in this table, we see that I conducted a total of 39 interviews, with 29 with adults and 10 with youth members of IOCs. You can see in IOC 1, I wasn't able to interview any youth. It's particularly high-risk population. They were all unavailable or unable to locate them. And then the second IOC, you can see that there were four adults and eight youth, And so this is a youth-led initiative, so the four adults were the adult staff, whereas the eight youth were the members of the IOC. And then the third IOC really is more of a, I guess just a general IOC where it was mostly adult membership and then they had some youth involved. I also reviewed a variety of documents from each IOC, including things like meeting minutes, bylaws, press releases, or blog posts. And I also conducted a number of observations of things like, again, the IOC meetings, different retreats, public hearings at which they were testifying, and press conferences. So I'm currently in the process of analyzing my data. I actually just completed my last data collection period 3 weeks ago, so I'm in the process right now. And I'm using an in vivo coding process where I break the transcript of the interview or the document into short, conceptually distinct chunks, and I give each of those chunks a name using the words of either the interviewee or the document. I then take each of these coded chunks and theme them, looking for common themes across them, and then I take these themes and I relate them to my research questions. Because I'm still in the data analysis process, this presentation, I'm really going to hone in on IOC2, and it's, again, based on preliminary analysis of these IOCs. In order to maintain the confidentiality of them, I'm not going to be describing any specific identifying characteristics, including the specific policy goal that they have. Oh, it's not clicking. I'm just going to reach over here. Okay. So again, I'm honing in on IOC2 for this presentation, and this is, I selected this one because I was able to interview both youth and adults, so I thought that was going to enable me to really present the last finding of, you know, how youth are involved, and also because I was able to do all my data collection in time to prepare this presentation, so it seems like a good fit for this presentation. So this IOC is a youth-led group, and so that means that the youth really have ownership over the work that they're doing. They make all the decisions, and they make the decisions about what policy issue they're going to work on, what their policy strategy is going to be, and they also do things like meet with policymakers or draft documents such as legislative bills. It's a statewide IOC with members in about 7 to 8 cities around the state, and most members are low-income youth of color. Okay, so moving on to my results. So first, to just give you an idea of the types of policy advocacy activities that this group is doing, they're meeting with policymakers and they're drafting legislation. They've testified at and attended public hearings, and they've also held rallies and engaged in a media advocacy campaign. There were a number of internal facilitating factors that were identified. So one thing is that being youth-led, this was felt as an advantage because the youth are the ones calling the shots. And so since they're addressing issues that affect youth, it was felt that because youth are making all the decisions, the policy strategy that they're coming up with is the most relevant for the problem and the most relevant for those affected. Adults were there to provide support, including emotional support and encouragement. And they also helped youth develop skills, such as meeting facilitation or policy advocacy skills. Another facilitating factor is that policymakers were frankly interested in what youth had to say. Youth coming to the State House was a novelty. So when they called and they tried to make a meeting with a policymaker, the policymaker would be like, sure, come on in, I'll give you a tour of the State House. And then they get there, they'd be completely blown away by the fact that these youth were actually coming with a really well-articulated message about a specific policy. Also, youth were innovative in the way that they presented their position. And so, as an example, some youth in this group had written, performed, and recorded a rap video that presented their policy position and played that at a public hearing at the State House. And so this was really advantageous to the group because their message stood out over other people's message. So also trust was seen as very important. So this was trust among the different youth in the IOC as well as between the youth and adults. And they were very strategic in how they built this trust. So there were activities such as very personal emotional sharing of personal stories at retreats, and there were also activities like high ropes courses to develop that trust. These relationships were really important specifically for the policy advocacy work because it allowed them to hold each other accountable for the work that they were responsible for doing. And, you know, these were, again, like youth facing a lot of issues. So if a youth was having a problem at home, because of the relationships they built, others knew what was going on. So if they weren't able to do the work that they had said that they would do, others would pick up and take it from there, and they were also there to emotionally support their peer. So one youth describes, we have a lot of activities that kind of make that group culture come together, like the emotional ones, but also group building funny activities that get people loose and out of their shell. And I feel like once you get someone out of their shell and they start to be more open to discussing things and learning things and kind of speaking up. The last thing that was important was having fun while doing the work. So the idea that youth aren't going to come if it's not fun. But it was also important to have adults there, and the adults were responsible for this on-off switch that people talked about, the on-off switch between work and fun, and so the adults led that. One youth described, I feel like adults are good because they have this on and off button where you can have fun. You can talk about anything, and then when they have work, when really, if we need to get something done, it'll be done, which is good because I feel like even teens were learning how to do that, which is kind of hard because I get distracted easily. Internal challenges. So not surprisingly, funding was identified as an internal challenge to the IOC, and specifically funding for staffing. So one youth described, I feel like the only challenge is lack of staff because I think it's the funding. But I think a lack of staff because there's so many teens, and I feel like there's a lot on the staff shoulders. So I feel like that's a lot of pressure because there's only so much that they could deal with at one time. Transportation is another thing that they need funding for. So again, it's a statewide IOC, so there's maybe a couple hours in between the cities of driving time. And these are youth don't really have access to cars or transportation. So they were really dependent on the organization that they were affiliated with or the IOC to provide the transportation and provide the staffing for that transportation. And there wasn't always funding to support that. Which kind of leads to the next internal challenge, which was youth being unable to attend the meetings. So they may not be able to attend because of transportation, or it could be just youth have busy schedules, they're applying for schools or scholarships or involved in sports. They may also be facing personal issues at home or in the school or homeless, and so they're not always able to attend. But with policy work, as you know, it's very time sensitive, and so if they missed a meeting, they might, you know, be out of the loop, and they may not be able to do some of the duties that they had been responsible for. So that can be a challenge. Also, by the design in this IOC, youth age out at 20 years old. And so policy work is very dependent on the relationships that people build with policymakers, and so this could be a challenge. One staff member described, it's hard to see a teen go who's met with the governor and all these officials, and the governor and all these officials remember that teen, so being able to bring that teen back says something, oh wow, this thing's working, this person's still involved, I should still support this work, as opposed to starting building relationships anew, like when we bring in new teens. Another thing connected to that is when new teens come in, they weren't necessarily involved in the early conceptualization of what the problems were and what the policy solution was, so they may not feel quite as much ownership as the ones who were involved at that level or at that point. So external facilitating factors. So youth are frustrated with things happening in their communities and schools. In another presentation, that might be on a challenges slide, but in this presentation, it's actually a facilitating factor because that frustration really fuels the work that they're doing and their commitment to the effort. So one youth describes, especially with school, like school stuff, like the budget and then limiting classes and everything like that, that's something that we can take with us and just, I don't know, like it gives us that much more dedication and that much more movement just to get this out and just to have it in our schools. The IOC also felt that media had been very supportive of the work that they were doing. And so some of the youth had met with a major newspaper in the area. And again, like the newspaper had their expectations of what the youth were going to bring and were blown out of the water. And so they were really supportive of the work. And they then wrote an editorial which provided more attention to and support for the policy advocacy work that they were doing. Lastly, the existence of a network of nonprofits in the state was seen as a facilitating factor in that it provided the infrastructure to build the IOC to support the work that they were doing, and it also provided opportunities for further collaboration in order to achieve the policy advocacy goal. So external challenges. Again, I'm sure this isn't surprising, the economic environment was seen as a challenge, where any policy change that would have budget costs was particularly challenging to pass at this time. The economic environment can also impact the ability of youth to participate because they may have to work to help support their families. Also, the policy process is slow, so this group works on basically a two-year schedule, basically the legislative schedule related to the bills. And so in that time, like youth age out, new youth come in, which, you know, I have already spoken about that challenge. But also, it can be frustrating to the youth to not see success for such a long time. Anyone who's done policy work knows that opposition to your policy goal can be very frustrating and a challenge. So the youth also expressed that. And they talked about how going into a meeting with somebody who was not on board with them was particularly frustrating to them, because they were kind of used to just getting these like glowing reviews. And if somebody really was against what they were doing, that was hard. But they always picked up and regrouped. And the last external challenge that was mentioned was the common perception of youth of color presents some barriers. And so one staff member told a story about how there was a quote-unquote crazy old white guy out in front of the state house yelling and screaming, but the security guard came to this group of youth of color and told them to keep the noise down, even though they weren't involved in it. So that might not have an immediate impact on the policy goal. However, it was discouraging and disheartening to the people, the youth involved. So the last thing I looked at was youth involvement, and I've kind of integrated this throughout the other parts of my results. But again, the youth-led approach that they use allows the youth to really make all the decisions and have true ownership over the work. And adults, it's important to have adults there, though, to offer the support and also to help the youth develop the skills that are necessary. So one adult staff says, we're very cognizant of the fact that there's, I don't know if you've heard the term adultism, but it's the adults taking over youth-led campaigns. It has to be theirs. They have to own it, or else they're not going to volunteer their Sundays once a month and time in between and 4 days on a weekend or whatever it is. Like, you know, this is a volunteer basis. They have to want to own it and love it, and we have to have fun while we do it. So this group uses a youth development model, and interestingly, this group, their goal, the organization, their goal is not the policy goal. Their goal is youth development. They use the policy advocacy work as a strategy to bring to develop youth. And so they just have a different approach to the work. It's not to say that they're not as committed to the policy change that they're doing, but they have a slightly different focus. There's a strong focus on skill development. So youth develop skills such as public speaking, meeting facilitation, writing an email, recruiting allies, and understanding the policymaking process. These skills are lifelong and transferable. So as an example, one thing they do is this 8 steps to recruit an ally, and they teach this through like funny dance moves and just being kind of ridiculous. And the youth, you know, obviously remember those 8 steps. So one youth took those 8 steps for recruiting an ally and used that to secure a job. So it's very transferable, what they're learning. And again, the importance of the mix of fun and work. So, you know, just to give you a sneak preview to the next steps that I'll be doing. So I'm going to be continuing my analysis, and I'm going to be looking across the 3 IOCs to look for trends. And they're all very different, so I think that will be really interesting. I'm going to report back my results to the 3 IOCs with which I partnered and to see get their feedback and to see if it resonates with them. And then from that, I'm going to create a list of recommendations for the IOCs as well as funders and policymakers. And then the last thing I'm going to do is partner with this IOC and to further document the youth development model that they're using, which uses policy change as a strategy for youth development. So just some takeaway points, and again, this is based on preliminary analysis. So this model of having youth ownership with adult support was a way to really build the skills of youth, but also to be effective at policy change, because they were able to get doors open to them very easily with policymakers and have their message really stand out. Thank you. Also, so policymakers respond very positively to youth, and they like to meet with them, and they're interested in what they have to say. And this work really develops lifelong skills in youth. So I just want to take a moment to thank my committee members. Some of them are here in the room. And also the 3 IOCs with which I partnered, my funding sources, the Rackham Graduate School and the Society for the Psychological Study of Social Issues, and my dissertation support group, who's also in this room. So thank you very much.